Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a weekly podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. How are you, Will?
We're here, Carlton.
And this week we're going to talk about Will's new site, learnjango.com. So, Will, you've still got a site, I guess, wsvincent.com?
Yes, so
You've started a new one.
I started a new...
So talk us about that.
Yes, so this is a long-term project that I've been working on. So a canonical source of my own stuff on Django that has tutorials, eventually books, courses, videos. And yeah, so I want to talk about what it was like building that and more broadly what it's like building a new site from scratch, sort of the considerations. And because I think there's so many choices you have to make, and some matter and some don't. Some you just have to decide and don't really have huge architectural implications, and some do. So we can talk about that. So where to start?
Well, tell us why you decided to start a new site, because Will W.S. Vincent has been your sort of personal brand.
Yeah, so...
site for a while you were writing the books.
Sure, yeah. So the wsvincent.com site, it's a Jekyll site, which is a static site generator written in Ruby. And it's really just... I've had it for 4 or 5 years just as a way to put tutorials and things out there as I was working at different companies. And, you know, so it has reached a point where it gets six-figure monthly unique traffic, and it's going to have a couple million people a year. I mean, that's pretty, to me, that's pretty high for just a personal site that I don't spend too much time on. And it's just got a mix of things like Python, JavaScript, and book reviews. You know, so I think I want to have a more, you know, Django-specific place where I can put tutorials that are on Django. I can lead people by the hand. And really, the goal is to mimic what I do in person, which is to assess kind of what someone's level is. Are they a total beginner, intermediate? And, you know, I've sort of built a library of learning materials, but I want to direct people a little bit better towards them instead of just searching, you know, how do they find stuff? Most people come in through a Google search and then they leave. But I know that if they come in and they look at something on Django REST framework, you know, and there's 4 or 5 other things I have that I could tee up or present, or even better, I could do a linear progression where I could say, oh, you're at this stage. Here's how to go ding, 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 and feel like there's some order to the learning, not this kaleidoscope of Googling around and not knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, if I a tutorial on this topic, do a bit more, Stack Overflow this, a bit more Google there. Oh, another tutorial, that was good. Like an experience, a choose your own adventure.
Yeah, so the site is, and part of that is, so I have the site up. It's not finished. It will always be worked on. But there's enough up there. There's search, there's tutorials, there'll be books, and I have it up. But maybe something to talk about is, so the site itself, as I've been playing this for a long time, is I gave serious thought to if I should build it in Django or make it a static site, because it's essentially a static site, and I like using static site generators. I've been using Netlify for my hosting, which is really fantastic, that handles everything. SSL, load, again, it's, you know, a couple million page views, and I don't do anything. And until recently, I didn't really have to pay for it either, though they've started adding some pricing there.
Call custom.
but this new site, and so I did waste a bit of time building out a whole version in with Jekyll, because on the one hand, right now all my tutorials and stuff, they're markdown files, and there's something reassuring to me about having them, you know, in Git as opposed to in a database, which, yes, I back up my database, but it could be lost. And also, it's even me with, I spend so much time on Django, part of me was like, it's a lot of work to do a Django site. Do I really want to do a Django site?
Okay, so what's the, because I from your first description of what the site's about, I've already you clearly need a dynamic site, but like, what was it that pushed you away from the static site?
Why not do a static site? There's two main reasons. Three reasons. So one is that I do Django, and I need and want just a evergreen project that I can perfect and play around with. Because I've found myself recently writing these books that I've done a lot of kind of hobby project sites. And there's something a little bit unfulfilling about that. It's also because I need payments, and I know what the future site will need. And so even though it's a little bit more work up front, I'd rather build what I know I'm going to need, and I don't see that as over engineering. as opposed to just getting up and running. And the third, you know, the third is we can get to this payments. So payments, if you're payments are really hard right now. It's Stripe and all the other companies. There's what is it, SLC. There's the new European law. So historically, you had to have a dynamic site to do payments. So you could pass the token back and forth. There are now options where you can do one hosted by Stripe or PayPal and do a webhook in. But I basically knew I would need it. And I think what I've, my current site is actually, I'm really happy. I've did all sorts of versions of it and over-engineering, but it's really quite basic what I have now, where I have the site itself. I have tutorials. So I have essentially a tutorials app with a list view and a detail view. Same thing for books. I'll have same thing for courses. And the biggest thing for performance, because I'm now redirecting the blog post from my personal site over, I have Cloudflare sitting in front as a CDN. So it's a dynamic site that loads, you know, instantaneously, and it's fast and it doesn't take much. I don't have to have a big database or anything behind it.
Yeah, because essentially you're still loading templates off the file system, right? And so the Django view is loading a template, file, rendering it, sending it out.
Right, so two things to say. So one is it's all server-side right now. I certainly had played around and would love to, I'd probably build it with Vue and, you know, do all these nice things, but that's very much third phase for me.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. You don't need to jump to that. You probably shouldn't for a solo project.
Right, but it's a solo project, right? So you're building it yourself, right? So there's a big question about what's possible with one pair of hands.
Right. Yeah. And the other bit is if you're doing redirects, you need to watch yourself. You don't want to get those wrong. You want to do a 301 redirect, and we could do a whole episode on that, but you want to be a little bit careful because you're the black box that is SEO. You lose some of your juice when you do a redirect, but you could lose like all of it, or you could really lose stuff. So it is sort of a long-term play. Like my traffic has gone down a bit because now there's this new site, and even though I'm redirecting, so I sort of know that as part of, you know, a project where you start it and just have all these things, and then you go more specific.
I believe it's important that you put in this ref canonical header in the old places, pointing to the new one and things.
And there's a way. So within Jekyll, there's a way to do it properly. And actually, somewhat interesting. Netlify just notified me that I have 2 weeks to change because how they handle redirects is going to be muffed up. And so I'm like, great, thanks Netlify, that's just what I need, like something important and technical to deal with. But anyways, so it's built in Django. And you know, the considerations when you start a project from scratch, I put a lot of thought into, you know, again, it's sort of like contemplation. When are you over engineering, when are you not? Thinking about the authentication and users. You and I had a discussion about this. I think we put in the forum of, okay, well, how do I want to handle authentication? Because I do want to have it, because I'll need that for people who log in and pay.
Yeah, but also log in and build up a reading list and things like this. And, you know, if you're going to offer a learning path, and, you know, it's all right doing that statically, but if there can be little ticks that appear for an individual user and all of that kind of stuff, I guess you could do it with JavaScript, but really you want that to be back-end driven.
Right, so it's nice to have, you know, checking your progress. I mean, there's a whole, it's actually not really Django-specific idea, thoughts around, do you require a login? How much do you gate? How much do you not? For now, I have a mailing list at the bottom, so a newsletter, because, you know, some people want to get updated whenever there's a new article or once a month, and some people don't, but they still want to be in the system. So that's actually something I'm still going back and forth a bit on, for how do you handle that, right? There's sort of two streams of thought. One is you do this drip campaign thing where people come in and you basically hit them with an automated sequence until they unsubscribe or stay, you know, basically until they buy something or leave. And the other is maybe more like a West Boss approach, where you require the email up front and then you only email like when you have a new course once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Most people would recommend the former, but I feel like there's something to the latter, especially if you're an individual where it's you, it's not a company.
Yeah.
So
this mailing list is so common now, like, you know, and these nurture sequences, I don't know, it seems like everyone's got a subscription you can sign up to, and you get so many emails, and the value of them isn't always that, you know, this is a nurture sequence that really is giving me something. So
yeah, I've talked to a number of people running successful learning companies, you know, like companies with people, and consistent advice I've gotten is you are not your customer. So you and I, Carlton, were power users, and I personally don't like drip sequences. I find it off-putting, but hard to say. Anyways, for now, I'm not barraging people, but I do have a login thing. And to get back on that topic, one of the, maybe you can talk about. So I like doing this idea of I use Django AllAuth, which is a package I'm very fond of. And I like having email and password, actually not using username. And then the last bit of that is I have to wire up my email service, which I use SendGrid for that, which is pretty straightforward. Okay. I have some tutorials on that. But you have this nice approach that you like to use, right?
Well, I like usernames, okay? So I'm just really old-fashioned. But it's like, you know, the username for me is like something that can appear on the site, you know? So if you've got a profile page, it's like
GitHub
/ Will.
Yeah,
like GitHub, right? So that kind of publicly exposable unique user identifier. Like that's your username. That's my username. That's so-and-so's username. I like to use email for login because people like that. And what AllAuth gives you is this nice email ability to handle multiple emails, and you can verify them individually, and you can mark one as primary, and it helps you to do the login with the emails, and it's got some good stuff going on with it, AllAuth. And then the user ID is like, you know, the actual ID that's in the database, but that never goes public. So I never put that in a URL, or I never put that anyway. That's the internal unique identifier which picks out the user, but that's not their username, right?
Yeah.
Well, an email, you know, I can have multiple emails per account, and
it depends. You know, it depends on the needs of the site. I mean, that's something so for my site, it doesn't really, you don't need a public username because it's, you log in and you have access to courses, but it's just,
but
it's just
no profile
you.
Page
there's no
or
public
anything like that,
page.
Yeah.
If there were, if a GitHub or a Twitter clone or something, absolutely, I would adopt the approach you're advocating.
Yeah.
And indeed, I built a whole, you know, version kind of the way you had described. And then I really thought about it. I was like, you don't ever need that for what I'm building, which is just basically an LMS.
Yeah, no, sure. And when you say advocating, it's what I like to use in sites that I build for these reasons. Like,
yeah, but this is a fundamental, you know, one of the decisions that really does matter that has to be made and is worth some thought, as opposed to, you know, I don't know, when you do the start project command, do you put it in the same, you know, do you add a period or not? You know, is there an extra directory? Like there's a whole bunch of those. And side note, my book, Django for Professionals, I walk through a lot of these steps of showing one way and talk about the trade-offs for how to do all this. So if I appear tired and garbled in this, which I am, that book is a resource. But what else? Models, right? So if you are you okay switching? Yeah, switch gears.
Yeah.
So models, there's, let's take the tutorials. Actually, I probably should pull up what I even have in the models. Okay, so models. I think it might be interesting to talk about the model I have for tutorials this pattern repeats itself in many projects. So I have an author, which uses get user model. So that refers to who writes it.
That's you.
Well, it's me. It's me. And I guess perhaps that's slight over engineering because
you've already scaled up for when you've got a whole media empire fleet and it's 40 people
in
the newsroom.
Yeah, that's a whole separate thing, but I have the capability of doing it if I want to. And I have the title and the description, and I've added the slug. I've got a whole Django slug tutorial because I want to use slugs. And again, because it's just me, I don't worry about collisions there. If I was building a Twitter clone or something, I would. And that's actually a great example of if you have a username, you don't have to worry about these collisions as much. Like if you're building a blog platform, if it's blog.com/Carlton/ you know, you don't have to worry about you and I writing the same hello world example.
Yeah, and what
post.
Like, and you might have an extra path segment for a date, which I know isn't fashionable, but if it's actually, you know, if it's a blog, you might have a date, which it helps to keep it unique. So it'd be unique for that date or unique for that year or unique for that month or whatever. Or you can have an extra little slug component. I'm sure we talked about this.
I think we talked
about hash IDs and...
Yeah. Side note, I cover...
Identifier, which is unique.
Yeah, and I cover...
Do you use that?
I don't use hash ID in this. I was going to say, I do in the Django Professionals book, one of the chapters, I walk through ID, UUID, hash ID, you know, kind of... Because that's tricky for beginners to understand how you implement that.
But with Learn Django, what you've got, because it's just you at the moment, you don't need to worry so much about the collision. So you can make sure the
I don't have to worry about that at all. And actually, and this is in my my Django slug tutorial, which you can find in the search thing on learnjango.com, I use the admin section because for now I'm putting it in the admin, so it auto populates the slug, so it saves me a step of, you know, if it's hello world, it'll automatically lowercase it and be hello dash world. Anyways, I'll link to that.
And again, so you're using the admin, you've got a super win there because you've got a UI which is perfectly acceptable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For free.
Exactly. The last bit is two things. One is I add a created at and an updated at field. So the created at is auto now add, the updated at is auto now. A nice way to do this actually that I wasn't aware of that Jeff Triplett showed me is if you use Django extensions, there's one of the Swiss Army features in there will automatically add these updated at. But basically almost any model that's going to have users update, you want to add a created at, updated at, just as a you're going to want it later situation.
Yeah.
And then the last bit is I have a is live Boolean field. So I can do drafts and, you know, decide if something's flagged or not. And that's really it. I mean, I also, you know, I do an underscore string method, you know, get absolute URL for the detail view. And that's kind of it. I've made more complicated versions of it, but it really doesn't have to be much more complicated than that. And that's the same approach I have for...
And what would I say? Like the thought that crossed my mind when you say about not making it more complicated is dead right. Start there. And then you can always add a migration, right? You can always add a field, right? The Django's migration framework is super and it lets you evolve your model. Whereas you'll sit there, spend 3 months planning all the fields and all the possible interactions, and you've got this model which has got 42 fields, and you only ever build the software for the first four fields because you never get to that. So just drop all that time and just write the four fields and work with those. And I need a new field, fine.
Yeah, you can always add them in.
Make migration.
And I'm definitely going that route of I can always add stuff in, and migrations are fantastic. I guess two other big buckets to talk about. So one is deployment.
So how are you deploying?
I'm just using Heroku because I'm familiar with it, because there is a slight cost, but I think what I have now with decent traffic cost me $7 a month or something. I mean,
right, okay.
And again, because I have Cloudflare sitting in front of it as a CDN, that absorbs the bulk of it and it makes it fast, and I'm not getting the server is barely being hit because everything is cached.
So can I just call? Yeah, so can I call you up, because you've said CDN a couple of times, but for CDN, when someone says that brings to mind like images and static files.
But it also can
that
be
they get distributed to edge location. But is it also a cache as well?
Yes.
Okay. And so how are you setting the caching headers to tell?
Yeah.
CloudFront
so
to...
for now it's just updating every. I should double check what it is. I think it's every once a day. So this is something I will go a lot deeper on when I have it'll be section or page specific. But for now, what I want to do is have it. And actually, I should double check. So whenever I do an update, it refreshes the cache automatically. But I'm just doing very broad strokes. Django on its own,
because they're still largely static pages, right?
Yeah, everything is static right now. I mean, there's nothing. When I start having, when you're logged in, you see things that you've checked and progress that you've made, you know, that's when I will fine tune that. And I'm actually not quite sure exactly how I'll do that. You know, so Django comes with built-in caching framework that you can use. I have a tutorial on that. But then also Cloudflare lets you do it at sort of the Cloudflare level. And I'll probably do it within Cloudflare, Cloudflare more than Django. But I haven't done that for real yet. So right now, that's a big broad stroke.
In Django, so say you're rendering Markdown, right, which is an expensive process.
Which I'm also doing, by the way, and I have a tutorial on how to do that.
Right, so say you're rendering Markdown, which is an expensive process. You want that rendering bit to be done. So you could, at least the rendered Markdown fragment, you would cache that in Django.
Yeah.
So that you know, if multiple requests are made for the page, then... It doesn't have to re-render the Markdown, which is the expensive bit. Whereas rendering the template, that's pretty quick. You know, if the Markdown is already converted to HTML, injecting it into the template and sending the template along, you know, that's not a slow process.
Yeah, and you were very helpful, as I was actually, I got a little bit tripped up in the Markdown part at the end of last year. And in the tutorial I wrote around it, I talk a little bit about some of those options. And again, it's a little different too, where this is just me now, so I don't have to deal with, it's not a public blogging platform or something like Medium where these things matter a lot more. For now, it's just me and the performance stuff I can just toss behind the shield.
The thing with the public platform is, you know, if people are going to submit Markdown, you have to make sure that that's sanitized. So you might use something like Bleach or
absolutely right. There's all these security concerns.
Whereas if it's just you, you can trust that you're not going to, you know, inject malicious HTML into your site.
Yeah, hopefully not. And that is actually something where you, you know, how you configure your static files and stuff when you're dealing with, if you're using white noise, which you probably are for serving static things, it will not do user uploaded things. You have to use Django storages.
Yes.
And again, apologies, I'm super sleep deprived, but there's
No, but that's exactly right.
Yeah. So that I had a little, small little bug on that and I was like, what's going on here? And that's what it was. Django storages, white noise will not do that. You have to use Django storages just to get around that. And that's a security thing. So some extras. So this is more the list of when you break down like just a basic Django site, there's so many things you can and should add to it. So, you know, search is one. So I have basic search set up where I have a tutorial on this where it's just, there's nothing fancy. I'm not using Postgres built-in search, even though I'm using Postgres. So I will add that later on. But that's sort of a nice feature to add. Sitemaps. Sitemaps are, so that's, there'll be like a /sitemap.xml, which you can point to Google or whomever and say, hey, here's a listing of my site. And you can add meta information around like how often to update it. That's something you should do. There are some gotchas on that. If you have a very large site, so I had this on a project, a Django project a couple years ago where I had 200,000 things in the database. The sitemaps will only do, I think it's 50,000. You can't just have a single canonical sitemap. You can break it into sections, and that's something you want to do. It's a little tricky there. Syndication.
The number was something like many thousands of
pages. I think the limit is 50,000 within Django. I think I found that generating them was so slow on my server and such a hit that I made it 5,000.
Right.
But, you know, that could be, you could change that number of ways, but just be aware that there is a limit and you want to have sitemaps. syndication framework. So that's if you want to have like a RSS feed, Django also comes with built-in support for that, but you need to add that. That's something else you should add, even if you think people don't use that. A lot of people still use that and you can point other things to it. Especially if you're doing, you know, like a blog kind of site, as I am.
But like, you know, if you've got an RSS feed, then you can really easy go to Zapier or, you know, Microsoft's Power Automate or whatever they call it. And you can wire up your RSS feed to post to Twitter or post to Facebook. And it's like all because you created an RSS feed. Whereas if you didn't, you've got to, like, well, you know, I've got to write a little agent that runs on the server and it checks every so often if there's an update or don't do any of that. Just create an RSS feed and then use, you know, Power Automate or Zapier or.
Yeah. And I guess related to just the suite of tools that you use, obviously I'm using Google Analytics. I'd like to use something else long-term, but you know, analytics are good. I'm using Uptime Robot to just check if the site goes down. So Django has a translation, a fantastic translation framework that comes with it. Because this is just me, I'm probably not going to use that. What I found actually, and this is another reason why I want to move from PDFs to online, is that readers, you know, can use the built-in browser translations, which is very powerful and very good for my books. So I'm not going to be using that, but a lot of larger projects, you'd want to use that. And what else? There's so many little things, right? Even though I build sites all the time, it's been a little while since I like fully built one out. And there's just so many small steps that I find myself kind of, you know, it's like I have a list of like the first 10 steps, but then to get to step 100, you know, I kind of, even I meander, right? Even though I've written a book on this.
You can't get it. Like you have, how can I phrase it? Like you have this, you sit down with a piece of paper and a, you know, glass of wine or whatever, and you're coming up with your plan for your site and it's going to have all these features and this bit will be written in React and, you know, all of this stuff goes on. And the reality is that, you know, getting the logins right so that it's 100% and getting it so that when people sign up for the newsletter, like they actually get the newsletter and they only get one and they don't, you know, they can control that preference and all the unsubscribe links are in the right places. And that takes ages. And then put it in your tutorials so that they come up nicely and that people can, you know, view them right or get an update from their RSS feed or whatever. It just takes ages to get this
Yeah, there's a big difference between...
Correct, that you never ever reach your React component.
No.
You never get there.
Well, I think there's... What's unusual about this site is, you know, so this is the prototype versus production thing, is that unusually, I already, because I'm redirecting traffic, like, I know it's going to get a lot of, or, you know, a reasonable amount of traffic. So I'm a little more careful with this than I would be if I was just throwing it at a wall and see if it would stick. Yeah. But it does take a lot of time. You know, of course, I've changing the admin. It's not at /admin. That's a best practice we've talked about. And I'm using Docker throughout, which that's a separate discussion, but I find that I know how to use it. It works for me. I'm just deploying the container up there.
I know how to work it. It works for me. That's like that's deployment. In
yeah, isn't it? What are some other cool things? So for my continuous integration, I'm using GitHub Actions, which actually works pretty well.
And is that deploying straight to Heroku every commit to master sort of thing?
Yes. So I don't have like a server staging set up right now. It's that tension between getting stuff up there and adding all the things that I know I probably will at some point. But again, because it's just me, it's different than a team production site. If I need to, I can always, you know, I can revert a commit, I can roll back something. So I'm a little more fast and loose there than I would be if this was a team of people.
No, but that's exactly the right thing. You need, like, you know, it's like using Kubernetes. Well, great. If you're a big team and you need 500 engineers and they all need to work on separate projects and they need to be able to do that, fine, brilliant. But if you're a two-man band or two-person band, what on earth are you using Kubernetes for? I mean, you
might
like it.
What was your Twitter comment that I loved the other day about Kubernetes?
Well, just you getting your eldest to sort of look after your newborn. It's like, that's like using Kubernetes.
Oh, yes. Because I was saying, you know, if you just space out the kids, then they take care of themselves. So I will, and then the last bit is payments. So payments is a total, it's unbelievably messed up how hard it is for a small business to do, because you have taxes, you have all these requirements that have come in. I would love to just use a service. I mean, basically, like, so for me as a small business content creator, I just want credit card and PayPal. PayPal is important because a lot of people use that. PayPal is very challenging to work with. You know, Stripe obviously doesn't have PayPal support. So then you go, okay, what am I going to use? There's Chargebee, there's Braintree, there's a new one, Paddle, I believe it's called, that Dan Bader at RealPython is using, that handles, in theory, all the tax stuff for you, but they're opaque on their pricing. I've tried to talk to lawyers and other people who run platforms. A lot of these rules around Nexus, so do you have to collect state tax? Do I have to collect, you know, VAT, even though I'm based in the States, they don't really apply until you are at a larger scale than I am, you know, something like seven figures. But yet, so basically I find that even though I want to and I will put time in to do this properly, there is no way to do it properly because the rules are being changed. It's completely onerous for a small business to do. There's no all-in-one solution. But if someone were to have, you know, credit card and PayPal and handle the taxes, there's services like TaxJar and stuff that you can plug in, but it's a real cost. And this, the other content creators I talk to, we all just go, oh my god, this is so hard to do. And it's even harder for subscriptions. That part of the new rules is around, you can't just indefinitely have someone be subscribed. I'm not going to be doing subscriptions, I'm going to be doing courses, but it's still a lot of work. And honestly, it's something that's post paternity leave, hopefully post coronavirus, that I integrate all that.
It's always been the way that I remember, you know, 15 years ago, it was always iframes, and you know, it was just horrendous. And then Stripe came along, and it was a lot better.
But
it's still not perfect.
And it's not Stripe's fault, but Stripe's had to react to this new European law, which just mucks it all up. And PayPal is still challenging. And it, you know, and that's the bit too where I really don't want to get that part wrong, right? Like, so I have testing, but obviously I really don't want to get payments wrong for a lot of reasons. So for now, I'm still.
But like, in testing, payments is just so opaque.
And that's really hard
too. They don't offer any way of, like, for instance, Stripe with their OAuth Connect platform or whatever, there's no way of testing it short of manually creating an account and, you know, stepping through it in the browser and to know that it worked. But that's not a sustainable testing program, that process. That's not like, you know, PyTest, go.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, you could do some headless stuff, or you could do some of
but it's in practice, right?
From people who've spent time on this. Yeah, it's just there's no perfect way to do it. It's really challenging. So that's the state of things. The site and the design of the site is something that I've kind of punted on. I love doing design, but it's a bit of a time trap for me. I'm just using Bootstrap. It looks fine. Yep. It's up, you know, I'm focusing on keeping it up to date. At some point, I will eagerly look forward to devoting time to making it look great, but I'm not letting that get in the way.
Everyone's reading it in their RSS reader anyway.
Something like that.
Yeah.
What else? Is there anything else? So video, I'll probably be doing video at some point because I have things structured. The way a lot of people do this is you can use, for private video, you could use YouTube, but then it has ads. You can use, a lot of people use Vimeo or they use Wistia. Wistia is a bit better, but it's quite expensive. And what a lot of people do, which I'll probably do, is you use YouTube for the free stuff so you don't have to handle the bandwidth.
Yeah.
And then you use something else for the, you know, behind the paywall version. But we'll do episodes as I build these things out. It'd be interesting to talk about. But the basic site, you know, if I knew what I knew now, I mean, it's not that much code. It's really a couple apps. It's the authentication. I'm using Cloudflare. You know, payments will be a big struggle. I've got sitemaps and syndication, but it's simpler than I thought it would be, actually. And partly that's because other people who've built sites in Django on this are doing things like they're using Redis and they're like sharding and all these things that I don't quite understand. To me, you know, it's like this running joke I have with my friends. I'm like, you're over engineering that.
Redis is a good idea, but, you know, rather than shard, get a bigger Redis, you know,
yeah.
To a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, as the site grows, that's, you know, something, you know, the email sign up, that's something that would make sense to move over, but I'm just stepping through it. And I'm really excited about having a project where I can do what I want with it. So I can have fantastic test coverage. I can play around with new things. You know, I've sort of realized that even though I could have had this up a lot quicker doing different ways, it's worth having a personal playground. And, you know, it feels good, right? I mean, that's the challenge too for developers. If you're working on a production product, you're just constantly given, you know, agile sprint, 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 sprint. And sometimes I want to write tests. Sometimes I want to play around with something. And I, you know, because of where I'm at in my with the work, you know, if I learn something, I can teach it, and part of that I can monetize. So I sort of justifies taking the time to spend extra time on things.
To do it properly.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it sounds very exciting.
And, you know, you have your own project you're working on, Carlton. When it's ready, we'll talk about it. But
yeah, like, if, but, you know, I'm, you know, four kids fellowing. It's no rush.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm happy to, you know, we'll do further episodes on stuff, get feedback. Yeah, there's more to be said about, you know, this prototype versus production. It's just for everyone, it's a big jump, and you just have to kind of make some decisions on how you do it. And the important thing is not to waste 6 months making it perfect locally and never getting it up. You just got to.
Throw it out. Release early, release often, you know, get it out there and just incrementally improve. And like you, like the minimum viable product for Learn Django is that you're putting tutorials up there. They're readable. You could subscribe to them. Use the newsletter. Brilliant. Get it up. There's no reason for it not to be up.
So we will be back in future weeks, episodes on Django. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're at Chat Django on Twitter.
Join us next time. Bye-bye.